Hey everybody, today's show is presented by Rocket Mortgage. Join Rocket Mortgage in saying thank you to essential workers by posting a video to everyoneknowsahero.com. Everyoneknowsahero.com. Let's get to the draft show.
The Around the NFL Podcast. BunkerCast, episode 3028.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm coming to you from a city filled with heroes in bunkers. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
It does feel like that.
Yes, it does.
I did think that at some point, do we need to stop calling them Bunker Cast, you know, NFL? Are we just, this is what the podcast is at this point. It's just the draft winners and losers show. And who knows if we're ever getting out of the bunkers.
We better get out of the bunkers. I think this is, about 28. I think it's our 28th show in the garage and apartments and back houses and everywhere else.
That's it?
I know, right?
Pretty well, someone asked if the, if you were a wagering person, would you bet on more bunker casts or more current Super Bowls? And this was a while ago, but I think bunker casts at this point are an easy out of the park home run.
Oh, so 55 bunker casts.
Before. I mean, if we're back in the office by 55, I would say that's a violent coup d'etat in terms of society freedom.
I always love when violent coup d'etat finds its way in sentences that you would never expect.
Am I wrong? I mean, you see us being back there in 23 episodes? I don't.
Or oh, no. Hell no.
No.
Hell
like
no.
We got out the guillotine and took care of coronavirus. Just right. The revolution off with the head.
I'm still, I think about sometimes if I left any food on my desk, what's going on in that place? Because
that's so true. I'd occasionally leave an apple and orange inside the desk. I mean, those things are a rotting corpse at this point.
When we left, and again, we have so much to get to. The draft is in the books, and we're going to share our winners and losers from the 2020 NFL draft. When this began, just like everybody else in the world, it hit everybody by surprise. I didn't know when I walked out of that office that we might not ever go back in. So I have a great like thermos that I had in the podcast studio that I almost thought about, can I get into the building to get it? And then I was told the key cards have been deactivated. So
great.
All right. Everything's fine. Yeah, the world's great. Yes, we're excited to go through everything that else that happened in the virtual draft. We are coming off our late Thursday night show where we gave you all the round one breakdown. And now we're going to spin through our thoughts and analysis on rounds 2 through 7. And all that good stuff. You guys feeling good? What's your like, Greg? What's a big picture takeaway from what we lived through the last 3 days as football fans and the football industry in general?
I mean, I really enjoyed it. Maybe it was just because I haven't had any sports to watch. I mean, I guess I'm just very average in that way. That, you know, Emeka, my wife, commented to me. She's like, I can't remember you like, you know, watching and stuff like getting us into the draft. You know, since we've been together, it's probably the last time I watched it at home, which was like 2005. Like, I just needed some sporty events. So I enjoyed it. You know, today, I don't know these day three guys. Day three's what
tough sitch.
Yeah, it's fine. but I liked it. It was a fun draft.
All right. So we, as we do every year in this Saturday evening show, we go through the winners and losers and let's get it going then. This will be fun. Wes, I want you to kick us off. Give us a winner. Let's start positive before we start taking our shots.
I'm going to do a tag team. Two AFC West players. Drew Lock, quarterback of the Broncos, and Josh Jacobs, running back of the Raiders. And I'll start with the latter. Hmm. Jacobs played with a quarterback who didn't really test anyone downfield last year, and I'm sure saw a lot of stacked boxes. Now you add, let me see these names here. Lynn Bowden, who to me, when I read about him, seems like a new era Josh Cribbs, former quarterback who's physical. You can use him all over the offense. You can use him in the return game. I'm sure he'll be their jet sweep kind of guy. Henry Ruggs, the fastest player in the draft. And then Bryan Edwards, another big wide receiver. You got a lot more weapons. That was the big weakness in this offense last year. And I think Josh Jacobs will see a lot more room to run. He was so impressive last year. And I believe should have won the Rookie of the Year award. And then the Broncos just every problem they had on offense, they fixed it. And I thought the cherry on top was getting Lloyd Cushenberry, the center in the third round, who a lot of guys thought was a plug and play starter right off the bat.
Mark's favorite guy.
Love Cushenberry. Had him at 32 to the Chiefs in my mock. I mean, that went south, but not for Denver.
I think Derek Carr, you know, you could throw him in there too for a winner. I mean, what an offseason he ended up having. The Tom Brady, you know, drama or rumors were clearly annoying to him for a while. But in the end, the results are what matters. And as Dan's pointed out, I think Mariota is about as good of an option as he could have had behind him for a guy that he should be able to beat out. He knows John Gruden's offense much better, and I think he's more talented than Mariota. And then you spend the whole start of the draft, you know, giving him more weapons, more options, more flavors. Bowden sounds like they announced him as a running back, that they're going to, he's going to be like a joker running back. You get two speedsters. The question I think with Carr is, you know, can he hit Henry Ruggs deep? He's always been such a conservative type of quarterback who doesn't take deep shots. And it's almost like, okay, we're giving you these deep speed threats. We're giving you as much as we can. It's a nice offensive line. Like, go show it to us this year. This is your year, Derek Carr. We've probably said this before, but it really does feel like he has to play better this year than he did a year ago, I think, to keep that job. And their defense, not as improved. And so this is going to have to be an offense-first team, which is what they were last year, too, when they were winning games.
It helps Carr a little bit that there's equal suspicion that Marcus Mariota could hit anyone deep on an accurate basis also.
Dan, getting your shots on Elway now. Look at this offense. We'll see who's laughing next year when he parachutes into Green Bay, snatches Aaron Rodgers away from the Packers, and installs him as the quarterback of this Broncos offense next year.
Listen, that's the only thing he's proven he can do is poach an obvious legend and then get the last drops of goodness out of him. Yeah, and listen, I at one point Trey Wingo almost fell over himself talking about how unbelievable this Broncos draft was. And it does look good on paper, but you know, we'll see how it goes. I'm just saying it's been a rough stretch for John Elway since Super Bowl 50, and he's going to need some results this year.
I'll concede that, but I think, I mean, even people who are skeptical of the Broncos have to look at the difference in this roster from last year.
Yeah. I think they have to love it. I think what they haven't, you said fix the other problems. I mean, their offensive line made some progress last year. It's been bad since John Elway's been there, and it still might be bad. So that could be a problem for them. And the backup quarterback isn't going to change unless Elway was lying. I mean, I read these quotes from Elway that said, we brought in Driscoll to be our backup. He's a backup quarterback in this league, and Drew Locke is a starter, is our starter. And so that part of it is not going to change unless that was just some sort of smokescreen.
They believe in Drew Locke.
They do.
Yeah, but really do.
Why believe in Jeff Driscoll?
When Driscoll's your quarterback, it means your days of winning are over, even if it's just for a game or two. Like, he's not a winner. Mm. He's not going to carry you to wins. It just doesn't happen.
Let's just listen to Trey Wingo.
It has been an unbelievable draft for the Denver Broncos. And let's not even add Lloyd Cushenberry and McKelvin Agim, the defensive tackle out of Arkansas. Unbelievable what the Denver Broncos are doing.
He's a snake charmer is what he is.
I mean, he's also into like hour seven of live television. I'm sure, you know, not every comment is
I am not taking down the Broncos draft. It seems like they did a good job, but the bar is so low for Elway to clear to be seen as a genius in this league. That's all.
Well, it's funny.
And you Broncos fans are going to come after me again in my mentions, and it happens a lot. But I'm just pointing out the obvious that it's like anything he does, he gets a benefit of the doubt, it seems.
It looks great, but I have noticed over the years, and I am the first person who does this, whoever drafts a bunch of offensive skill players, everyone says they had a good draft. You know, because that's like the players, you know, and it's just like, oh, you can just imagine them coming to the team. And that is what the Broncos did. And it looks great on paper.
And Wes, we talked about it at the combine. I like Elway. He reminds me, I think about my childhood, and he's one of the great quarterbacks of our youth. We'll see what happens. Good luck to the Broncos. They're not.
Your stance on this is fair. It certainly helped Elway that, well, not only was he a legend, but he came in and dominated that division for years. Mm. And maybe that was all Peyton Manning, but I agree with you. What he's done at quarterback and offensive line since Peyton Manning left the Broncos is embarrassing.
Well, you threw the Raiders and Broncos together. That whole division does look really good. Oh, yeah. The AFC North,
but they
AFC
all do
West.
Right now, don't they? That's what I fall for. I mean, I feel like 88% of the league feels like a playoff team to me, smack dab in late April when everyone's added 8 or 9 players that everyone's gushing over relentlessly.
I don't think so. And the AFC, to me, like the AFC East obviously doesn't look that great. And the AFC South is fine. But those, the AFC West and North in division, those games look like a lot of fun.
I'll throw out another winner. I'll stick in the AFC West since we have a theme here. People who want to see the ceiling of a Mahomes-Reed offense. This is fun. I mean, you take in the first round this Clyde Edwards-Helaire kid who we talked about on Thursday night. That Wes, how did you describe him or see him comped? Is Priest Holmes? Was that what it was?
Some kind of mix-up of Darren Sproles and Priest Holmes.
Priest Holmes was the comp on television by multiple people too.
Reed comped him to Brian Westbrook. Said he liked him better than Brian Westbrook.
Yeah.
And then the Brett Veach, who Greg, you know, speaking of putting respect on people's names, I know you respect him now. It wasn't always that way.
Well, I gave him like a silly voice on our You're the GM rankings. You're right. Because he looked like the only GM that, you know, I could potentially compete with in like an altercation.
That's up for grabs.
Veach and Andy Reid, they bring in this running back. So imagine if he clicks and he's a star. And I feel like when you get a running back in the back of the first round, it makes me think of Josh Jacobs. These guys can hit the ground running, or in year one, you might even get the best season out of them. So we'll see what happens with that. They focus more on defense the rest of the draft, which makes a lot of sense as well. But I just, if I'm a Chiefs fan and I'm already on cloud nine after what happened last year, you just think to yourself, a fully healthy Patrick Mahomes, now you have a potential stud in the backfield. You keep Sammy Watkins, so the wide receiver group is coming back intact. As long as the offensive line holds up and they protect Mahomes, we're talking about a potentially historic offense, and you saw that in this draft, the way the rest of the AFC West tried to stack up their offenses because they're terrified about what's going to be happening in Arrowhead this year.
And they don't draft players that don't fit their system. I mean, Reed, obviously, I mean, when you hear Brian Westbrook comparisons and Reed sees that and more, I mean, what coach do you trust more to plug him in and make him immediately productive? We're to the point where, I mean, by Saturday, every fantasy related type podcast that was coming out and report and tweet about him, that running back, was like he's automatically vaulted into the higher upper echelons of fantasy drafts already, sight unseen.
He also, Reed has the advantage of having been there 5 years and is a guy who you really trust to have a plan coming out of this if they don't have a lot of practice. Like, that offense has been together. To Mark's point that he thinks it's going to help the teams, you know, not having practice that have been together. I think that's true. That's going to be true for some teams, not most. But the Chiefs would be one. I mean, the Chiefs of any team, like they could show up tomorrow and play week one. And I think they would be fine.
Yeah. Mark, how about a winner?
I'm going to double package the bottom half of the AFC North. Now, I think it's been, you know, because I think, Wes, you'd agree with me that we don't really view the Bengals playoff run that got a little bit ballyhooed by some as really something that's mattered historically, that it's been 55 years since the Browns and Bengals have won a playoff game together. I would say one thing that comes out of this process, the entire offseason process for me with Cincinnati and Cleveland, is a message to both fan bases that there's been a lot of discordant mishmashing, lack of identity, no idea what these teams have been about for the past couple of years, and for Cleveland a lot longer. Now I think it's pretty clear to be confident in the Bengals and the Browns. I am, and I think that the Bengals, obviously, you know, all they could have done, if they did anything other than take Joe Burrow, it would have been a hot mess. They didn't mess around with that. You go get T. Higgins, and you know, it's, you look at what they didn't have last year. They now have A.J. Green back. You get linemen like Jonah Williams back. Joe Mixon is Jonah Mixon. They added a bunch of guys on defense, and they were aggressive in free agency. And the Bengals, to me, have provided legitimate, tangible, exciting hope to Cincinnati and Cincinnati's fan base for the first time that I can remember in a legit long time, because I am someone that simply looked at, and I realized that you guys think I was a little harsh on the Andy Dalton experience in general, but just as a ceilinged experience, that your excitement can only be so high barring a Joe Flacco-like Super Bowl playoff run. And I would go to Cleveland and say this, that you have Andrew Berry, who is the youngest general manager in the history of the NFL. And I thought that he went right into free agency and helped that team right away by going out and getting Jack Conklin on the right side. And when you got Jedrick Wills, I loved what they did with Grant Delpit at safety. They really, round after round in the draft, found value. And it, to me, was very clear what the Browns are looking for in the draft. It is highly decorated college players who won national awards, who were team captains, who were not flash in the pan 1 year type guys, but showed production year after year. And when you use that system and that grid, they found value. And I'm not trying to overhype them. This is not based on my analysis. It's looking at draft guys.
He's getting excited, folks.
Well, no, they were tweeting at me saying, "You found value each one of these rounds. These players have done more than people realize at the college ranks. Will it work out? I don't know, but I there, you know, it's the 88
over under mark, 9.5 wins, Cleveland Browns.
Well, I'm not sure they're even a better team than the Bengals. That's my concern would be more that
the question.
Yeah. I would say they would 9 wins, so under. I'll go 9 wins, okay? And I think that might be enough to get the 7th seed in a weird AFC, but
mind the 7th seed now, do you?
No, I don't at all. But I would say this, that the AFC North, which has truly just been owned by the Steelers and Ravens for eon upon eon, is now more intriguing, and it's freaky, and it's weird. And it's like, I have to go back, because again, I just totally ignore the Bengals teams that went to the playoffs and didn't do anything. Back to when Wes and I were in 6th and 7th and 8th grade, were the last time that the Browns and Bengals had any sort of a rivalry or provided true challenge to the other teams in their own division. I think it may not all come this year, but we are heading in that direction. I'm sure this will be a soundbite that bites me in the butt 1,000 times, but I feel that way because I don't think it's just a mirage. I think there seems to be, both teams, a plan.
The Bengals have a quarterback with charisma, and it's been a long time. I would go back to Boomer Esiason, the last time they had a quarterback with this kind of charisma, this kind of personality that's infectious. And I was texting with some friends and family from Cincinnati. This is the first time I've had legitimate hope for the Bengals in probably 30 years.
Wow.
I have some hope they can turn it around.
And I think they got a great value in Higgins, who I was a little mystified why he slipped a little in the draft process. I mean, he's the guy that you would have expected would have been a top 15 type of guy. When you watch him, he's so smooth. He's so good. He just immediately reminds you of AJ Green. I mean, there's no one that you would think of in terms of a boundary receiver who's faster than he looks. And these guys tend to always fall a little bit in the draft. Not that Green fell, but these kind of long strider, tall guys who don't necessarily show the separation. DeAndre Hopkins is another guy that he got compared to. When you watch, I mean, he just is such a smooth receiver, and to throw him backing up Green for now, and then assuming he takes over for Green a year from now when Green probably leaves in free agency, it's fun. And to your Browns point, Mark, I think the best sign for them is, like, you didn't hear anything about them in the weeks leading up to the draft.
They've been a leaky.
Since this ownership came in, it's been messy, and this did not seem messy.
Also, to your point, Mark, and this does feel like a time of transition after 20 years of the Patriots atop the league and being the big bully in town, that the NFL is maybe changing and going in different directions. Yes, Harrison? Okay. And how about some of these rivalries coming back? You know, the Bengals and Browns, you know, the Jets and Dolphins, the Giants and Redskins, you name it. Some of these teams that have been dormant for the past half decade, 10 years, bring it back.
Yep.
The draft. You need more than the draft for that, though. You need wins.
Well, give us this, 30, 40 minutes.
It was more of the Giants and Redskins that stuck out there. Yeah. It's like, you know, you got to start winning some games. While we're on the Redskins, I'm just going to throw out a winner. We're all winners for never having to talk about Trent Williams trade rumors again on this podcast. And maybe the Redskins are winners in this, too, just that they as we went to bed Friday night after day two of the draft, seemed like they were stuck with Trent Williams or they couldn't figure anything out. And they end up dealing him to the 49ers for a third round pick next year and a fifth round pick this year. And Joe Staley retires on top of that. As good as it is for us, and it's good for the Redskins to just kind of solve a problem issue, it's even better for the 49ers. I mean, Trent Williams is a nasty player. He couldn't fit in better with the team that loves to be bullies. Because when I think Trent Williams, I think he's going to have a decent chance at the Hall of Fame someday. You think of him as just kind of the bully, like the meanest left tackle there is. That if you just picked one that's the most physically imposing, that's him. And he's got some injury issues, and that's a risk. But
and he hasn't played in like 2 years.
Right. You know? But for the 49ers to be able to plug him in when their left tackle the last 14 years retires and they knew he was going to retire, you know, that's pretty seamless and that's pretty great.
Jimmy G's a big winner. It was a very real possibility that Tom Brady could have taken his job again, and it didn't happen. They made the decision to stay with him. Now he gets a potential Hall of Fame left tackle with a huge chip on his shoulder. Who replaces a guy, Staley, who was excellent, but was getting older and obviously ready to walk away from the game. So when the dust cleared since Super Bowl 54, things worked out pretty well for Jimmy G. Go ahead, Mark.
No, I was going to say it was Mike Shanahan that drafted Trent Williams. And, you know, and that the
Kyle
Shanahan.
Was there too. Kyle right, was there.
Kyle was there. And the Shanahan, Daniel Snyder ending was far from pretty, but. As Peter Schrager noted on Twitter, you know, maybe in this time where we're all being very challenged, we're learning to get along a little better because Daniel Snyder and Kyle Shanahan were the people that put this deal together. So, you know, anything is possible in 2020.
Wes, how about this? A loser connected to this. Again, all the football team builders for not having the GM app.
Yeah, this, absolutely.
This is a Hall of Fame level left tackle with prime years remaining. This thing drags out for almost a year, or feels like a decade. And the end of the day, it's a fifth rounder in the current draft and a third rounder next year. I mean, you're telling me, and I understand it was messy and there was all sorts of layers to this.
I think he's going to ask for more money, too. I think that's a big part of it, is he wants to get a big new contract.
Okay, but I guess, I don't know, maybe if this was handled better in the Redskins, yeah, if you want to give them a lollipop for just getting this off their plate, that's fine, but... I mean, if that ends up being – so they lose the player who refused to play with him, and then when you couldn't even maximize him in a trade, I know you're kind of cut down at the knees a little bit when the guy is saying, I'll never play for you again. But third and a fifth, ugh. Yeah, if I'm a Redskins fan, I was thinking I'm at least getting a second rounder out of this.
Well, the environment was terrible, yeah. too, because a bunch of tackle-needy teams filled that need – you know, in
the 49ers considered it. They thought about trading up. And I do wonder if they wanted Mekhi Becton, because to me, that is the type of guy that they would have wanted. And then they stopped trying to trade up at that point. But the problem is Ron Rivera is paying the Bruce Allen tax. It's like Ron Rivera comes in. He's inheriting a situation he had nothing to do with, but he's having to pay the tax of what Bruce Allen left him.
Wes, winner or loser?
Oh, I was going to say 49ers also clear $7 million in cap space, get draft picks for Matt Breida and Marquise Goodwin, and find homes for two players who were no longer needed anymore on that roster. Good job by them.
Yep.
I like Breida in Miami. They didn't draft a running back, but you know, their running backs are easy enough to find, and getting him for a fifth round pick is kind of a good example of it.
That's kind of a great trade, I think. All right, Wes, you're up. Go either direction.
I'm going to say loser, AFC Super Bowl hopefuls not named Ravens or Chiefs. Sorry, I mean, you're just left behind.
I guess everyone.
They don't exist. They're left behind. The Chiefs, I mean, good luck stopping that offense. And then the Ravens add one of the fastest slot receiver prospects. They add a couple of linemen, another deep threat receiver, and J.K. Dobbins, who I love hearing from college football fans who watch these guys every week and have followed them for years. My brother Phil at the Combine a couple of years ago said, J.K. Dobbins, watch out for this guy. Like, out of all the Ohio State running backs, I love him. Spice Rack loves him, thought he was a great pick for the Ravens. And then on the flip side, I have Georgia fans from Tybee who thought Swift was incredibly overrated, the guy the Lions drafted in the second round, and was not nearly as good as any of the running backs they've had there in Georgia.
I love Swift. When I watched him, he kind of looked like the guy to me that popped off as the most talented guy in the draft, like complete sharp cuts, super explosive. It didn't surprise me that
lack of explosiveness is what everyone said to me.
I mean, like the sharp, sudden movement. It didn't surprise me that DJ had Swift ranked, you know, considerably higher than any running back in this draft, just because he's the type of guy, you know, that I think the NFL's drafted in the top 15 or 20. And I love the way he moved. Dobbins seemed like a much safer and a great pick. Like, you know, Spice Rack compared him to Emmitt Smith. And he's the type of guy who has a lot of the subtleties. You can see him setting people up. Like if you get him, block him 4 yards, he'll get you 8. And he just seemed like a pro. And it's not good news for your boy, Mark Ingram, though, who's not going to be the lead rusher you would think there anymore, Mark.
Well, I think that if they run this a similar type offense to last year, Mark Ingram still is a big role. But you're right. There's multiple backs, and you're always going to, team building wise, favor the less expensive younger guy.
Mark Sessler, winner, loser.
Well, I would go Panthers. I thought I liked their draft a lot, and I think if you come out of this, and you know, they're one of only 5 or 6 teams in the last, you know, 60, 70 years to draft all defense, and
first team to draft at least 7 players all defense since the 85 Browns.
Yeah, I mean, it's so it's a statement. I think they went in knowing what they needed to do, and I don't disagree with that assessment. There's a lot of pieces on offense, and they didn't move Curtis Samuel, so they've still got those parts. But you get Derek Brown. You know, I guess some people like Darren Brown more than others, but he fits for them. Yetur Gross-Matos, who a lot of people thought would go in the first round, they got at a value spot. Jeremy Chinn at safety, a lot of people also thought could have gone earlier than he did. So for me, I mean, these are names, and they got them at good spots, and they got value in each round. But Matt Rhule, first time coach, and I think Matt Rhule also has a distinct advantage in this draft specifically, having anyone coming from the college ranks, they may be at a bit of a disadvantage learning the NFL process. But, you know, they talked about the fact that he just had a visual eyes on library on so many more college players than your average pro coach who is learning the college guys coming out of the combine. They've got to cram for 40, 50 days. And Matt Rhule has been game planning for some of these guys for so long and fell in love with some of them and knew their strengths and weaknesses. So that's one advantage for a first year coach. And I thought the Panthers were organized. I don't know what the future with Marty Herney is at GM. I don't know if that's a pairing that will live forever, but he didn't get in the way. It seemed like Matt Rhule was in control and got what he wanted. And so for the Panthers, you know, in general, I kind of like the experimental nature and the rebuilding project going on in Carolina. I'm keeping my eyes on it, and good draft.
So big winner, Phil Snow, the defensive coordinator. I mean, who's another guy who's coming from college? Not a lot of NFL coaches on that defense. So
right.
It is an experiment. Like their defense is a total mystery, but it's pretty talented in the front 7. They have no one in their secondary. I mean, it's maybe the worst secondary in the league. So if the idea that like the Dolphins and the Patriots are like, oh, let's build from the back to the front, They're the opposite, at least right now.
Well, and they said they wanted to build from the front. That also could say we don't have much of a choice because you can't draft 12 secondary players all in 2 days. So
sometimes I feel like when teams, and the Panthers obviously did it to the extreme, it feels like a little showy and overcorrective steering sometimes to go completely in one side of the ball in a draft. Is that?
I think it's like luck, though, that it happened that way.
I'm not burying the Panthers or anything if that's just how the draft board fell, but it almost makes it seem like, you know, oh, our offense is fine. It's the defense. As long as Rhule can coach up this D, everything's going to be okay. Well, we'll see.
I think they could have taken an offensive tackle or someone else if the right person, if things had gone a little differently. But you're right.
And they'll probably end up taking 5 or 6 offensive players next year because they realize that they don't have anything on that side of the ball. Well, how about a nice measured draft? You know, I'll stay out of it.
And a quarterback.
Their offense does look pretty solid.
6.0.
On paper.
All right. Let's get negative.
All right, I'm throwing out a loser.
Yeah.
How about Eagles fans? I'm giving you a big fat L.
Colleen is, by the way, one of the more sweet-natured people I know. She's just a good woman. And she was legitimately thorny.
Well, I think
after she got off, and she did amazing work on Network all the days of the draft. But yeah, go on.
I think that's, she's dialed into the Eagles fans on Twitter and the Eagles media on Twitter, which for some reason were apoplectic that this was the worst draft ever, and that it became this like crazy groupthink that they've just, you know, torn down the state, the building, because, okay, in the first round, you know, it hurts. You see CeeDee Lamb go to the Cowboys. I guess that hurts. It's like, oh my gosh, we took the number six consensus receiver instead of the number four consensus receiver. And like this guy, you know, Jalen Reagor, like fit their needs. Like, who are you? There's some draft experts that like that was a crazy pick. So they were already on.
I think Lamb was like the number one, but
no, I'm talking about Reagor was six, and people were upset that they didn't take Jefferson. I mean, I'm sure they would have loved to trade up, but it hurt that they saw the Cowboys go. But then what really made him go crazy was Jalen Hurts. And I'm not surprised that the fans and the media went crazy that you used the late second for a quarterback. But this always annoys me. Like, fan bases always go crazy when a team that has a quarterback takes another quarterback. And I think if it's the right player and it's the right spot in the draft and you're in whatever's going on, like, quarterbacking is so valuable that everyone wants this immediate gratification of, like, you can imagine he gets plugged in. Hey, most late second guys don't help you that much right away anyways. Like, it you want a guy that's going to develop and everything. And quarterback is so important that it makes sense to me that you keep drafting quarterbacks. Like, I think the Patriots drafting Jimmy G and Jacoby Brissett makes sense. The Saints have invested a lot in backup quarterbacks. And of all the fans,
are you about to go Charlie Casserly on us?
The most important person in the organization is your quarterback. And the second most important person in your organization is your backup quarterback. And you know who should know that more than anyone? The Eagles. They had a near MVP as a backup quarterback in Michael Vick. They had a Super Bowl MVP as a backup quarterback in Nick Foles. And they have a starting quarterback with durability problems. Like, I just don't get why, like, they went so nuts about
it. Because it feels to the layman, to a fan, that especially coming off a very frustrating season in Philadelphia, where you really felt like the team builders did not do a good job building around the quarterback. And then you hear for three and a half, four straight months about how this is the best wide receiver class in eons. And you get tons of value in the second and third round in this draft. And then in the second round, you take a quarterback. And I think Lewis Riddick might have said it during the telecast, and Lewis Riddick, I cannot stop staring at his background. He had, you know, he had a generic football bro background where it was a bunch of biographies for Bill Walsh, Bill Parcells, this guy, that guy, all NFL legends. And then, like, yeah, just like Mark. And then, like, right in the middle is an unauthorized Jay-Z biography, autobiography. And I'm like, what? How did that get in there? Everything else is football, and then just this one Jay-Z book. I don't know.
Just to let you know, I have a Nias Nin down here. I don't think Lewis Riddick has a Nias Nin novels on his.
At least in the Jay-Z thing where he, like, it was like he wrote the lyrics and it was a little bit of his own book. Don't get
me. Oh, is that what it was?
No, okay. I'm saying at least have that one. Not some unauthorized.
I think half of Colleen's.
I don't know what book it was. It's just a Jay-Z.
I think half of Colleen's being triggered was the fact that the Cowboys should have been one of our winners that we listed too.
Well, let me just. My point, I got sidetracked by the Riddick conversation, but just that, I think someone said on telecast that your backup quarterback on a 53-man roster is like a top 30 commodity. So it is important to have that guy, especially with the Eagles. You're right. But you understand that frustration, too, from the fans who dealt with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside and all those other Jags all season.
But in a way, that sort of that helps prove the point. It's like last year, their late second-round pick was Arcega-Whiteside. You know, of course, you have to be right. You don't give up. My point is, like, you don't know if this is going to work or not. They have to be right about Jalen Hurts. My point is, if Jalen Hurts is good, and they obviously love him, and some people really do love Jalen Hurts, then it's going to be nice to have him. And who knows what's going to happen in the next 4 years. Like, that's a valuable rookie contract to have. If he's just a backup, that's worth it to me if he's a good backup.
That's a very sound argument. And I bet there's a pocket of Eagles fans that would basically agree with what you're saying. But the draft is the event that I think that unleashes insane analysis from analysts and insane behavior from fans, because it's so separated from an actual on-field reality check that you're basically reacting. Most people, I know when I, you know, even now, we're not studying every one of these guys. Like, it'll be a fourth round and, you know, the Browns will take some. Well, why did they do that? Well, what do I know? I mean, it's like checking in 2 years and the guy's made two Pro Bowls and I just wanted some other person who had a flashier name. I mean, fans don't act. Fans are just plugged in and passionate. And Eagles fans, I mean, are the ones who, like, you know,
All right, I'm blaming the media more than I'm blaming the media more because a lot of these Twitter follows I had, they were going just as crazy.
I just do think it was a Dallas thing where you got Jerry Jones on this like $45 billion yacht, which we saw at the Super Bowl and down in South Beach. That the Cowboys kind of nailed this thing, or at least did what makes you think that was a good draft. We'll see what happens, but it's a flashy, exciting, marketable draft, and the Eagles went southward in that on that front for a lot of their fans.
You know that saying. If you start listening to your fans, you'll be sitting in the stands with them. Mm-hmm. I read the origin story for that the other day, and it's really interesting. It comes from Bulls analyst Johnny Reg Kerr from the 1980 draft when the Bulls and Lakers had a coin flip for Magic Johnson. And the Bulls listened to their fans who said, vote tails. And they went tails and
never
it turned up
tails.
Heads and they lost Magic Johnson to the Lakers.
I mean, how do you vote tails anyway? You always vote heads.
I don't know.
What a disgrace.
Tails never fails.
I often vote tails.
Apparently it does.
I go tails. I
kind of had Carson Wentz as a loser in this, but your logic is sound, Greg. I think that Aaron Rodgers is a loser here. We talked about the Jordan Love angle of it all and the eye of the tiger talk. But then I'm looking at, and again, the fans, just like Eagles fans, clamoring, give us more wide receiver options. Give us somebody. And this is what their draft was. QB in round one, running back A.J. Dillon out of Boston College in round two.
Who's not a receiving threat, who's just like an old school pounder.
Between the tackle
type.
Pounder. Yeah. They took a tight end in round three in a draft class that is not good in the tight end department. Maybe this Josiah DeGuara becomes something, but we'll see. An inside linebacker, a guard, a center, a tackle, a safety, and a defensive end. Yeah, you want to talk about thumbing your nose at the fans, not what they were doing, but it could feel that way because they didn't take a wide receiver in like 9 or 10 picks. And then the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports that the Packers are moving toward a, quote, run-oriented attack this upcoming season. You know who's under attack? Aaron Rodgers. Please get me somebody inside that compound, wherever he is. I want to know what this guy's really thinking right now, because over the course of the weekend, they give you no new options to throw to. They draft your replacement, and there's a report leaking that they're not even going to make you you're not even going to be involved in a pass-first offense when you're Aaron Rodgers. What a three. This is Aaron Rodgers' worst draft since he was sitting in that green room for 3 hours in 2005.
Kyle Shanahan beat LaFleur, his old pupil, so bad in the playoffs and so thoroughly that now LaFleur wants his identity to be Kyle Shanahan's identity.
And that's his old guy.
Yeah, DeGuara to me sounds like sort of a bigger Kyle Juszczyk, a fullback tight end kind of hybrid who – I mean, when you read about him, who drafts a fullback in the third round? But it looks like he can play every special teams you want. Fullback, tight end, downfield threat. So that'll be an interesting one. And then to get that big back, he came from Tennessee, LaFleur. He was the offensive coordinator for Derrick Henry. So that'll be interesting. I think to springboard off of yours, another loser is Aaron Jones dynasty owners in fantasy football. You got 20 touchdowns out of that guy last year. You're never getting close to that again.
Man, A.J. Dillon, who was the running back, some people just couldn't see it. Mike Renner, who I think does a really good job at PFF, he's their main draft guy, just thought he didn't think there was any chance Renner could make it happen. Now, obviously, the Packers aren't. It's like Brian Gutekunst is good at his job, and he totally disagrees. But here's a guy who is 250 pounds and doesn't, like, run over anybody, and it's going to take a while to, like, get him going. And you don't see a lot of those guys at that height succeed. Yeah, you're right, Dan. It was a bad draft. There's not many receivers out there either. I tried to look for some free agents, like maybe there would be someone, unless they went Antonio Brown.
And Seth Wickersham, you know, he's exhausted that well in New England. Green Bay's the place to go now because in one draft, think about how difficult potentially the relationship is for Matt LaFleur now, who now probably, if he ever had Aaron Rodgers as an ally, and we didn't hear anything of like, real distrust between them, but he's going to think he was involved with this. So LaFleur has to deal with that as well. You know, we'll see what happens. It feels like it was a traumatic draft for the Packers, and I don't know if they're better or not. I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, maybe this is like his Al Pacino in the first Godfather moment where he pulls the gun out and the Italian restaurant and suddenly goes from squeaky, whiny voice Al Pacino to something closer to the Al Pacino we know today. I don't understand
Wait,
why
for
that.
Who? For LaFleur? LaFleur?
Yeah, Matt LaFleur. He's like, you know, okay. He was like, as he was.
I know what you're saying, Mark.
He was described by Dan's dad as a boy with a beard. I mean, so, it, you know, at some point,
you,
he's going to say,
call
I'm
him
a
flower. You call
well,
him a flower.
The flower doesn't suggest that
you could connect
totally
the dots here.
Yeah.
We met the guy last May, last March.
Nice guy.
A bit of a soft-spoken guy. You wonder if this is if he has the medal for this, because this could be tricky.
Last year looked like Gutekunst's draft, and this year looks like LaFleur's draft. Just the imprints that they seem to have on it.
To Gutekunst's credit, it's like he's deserved a little benefit of the doubt. He's been on a pretty big winning streak since he took over that job.
That's fair. And Matt LaFleur, for that matter, they went what 12-4 and got to the NFC
13
title.
13-3.
Can I give you
go ahead the last lap?
Can I give you a quick off the field loser?
Yeah, let's do that.
I mean these two items were, you know, the draft is long and it's, you know, you've got to make sure you're eating the right food and drinking the right stuff to keep your body going so you're not just fading away. Because day three feels to me like you're walking across the Nevada death plains. I mean, it's a long journey, day three. Let me tell you two things that brought me immense joy.
It's Mojave.
Well, that's fair. I don't know why they need to name them. But how about this? Overly assuming girlfriends who really, really struggled during this draft. And I mean, this was right in our wheelhouse, Dan, and the rest of us.
Are you referring to the CeeDee Lamb incident?
Oh, CeeDee Lamb. I mean, everyone's seen it at this point. CeeDee Lamb, and you've all had this experience in your life where, and it may be for no guilt-associated reason, but, you know, the girl goes and grabs, he had a girl, his girlfriend, I assume it's his girlfriend, sitting next to him, and he had multiple phones, and he's on the phone, you know, dealing with people left and right, and he had a second phone on his lap, and the girlfriend just sort of audaciously grabbed it. I don't know what she was thinking she was going to do. And, you know, he just wrestled it, immediately looked at her, wrestled the phone out of her hand. And then suddenly, you know, the screen doesn't move and it's locked on her and you don't see her face, but she suddenly turns to the rest of the room and you're thinking, and I assume she's a very nice person, but she is probably history on the Lamb family tree scenario.
She gone.
And then the second one, and this might have even the Lamb one got more play, but this one picked up steam. Isaiah Wilson, the offensive tackle drafted by the Titans, you know, they had a close shot on him and he was hunched in his couch, big dude. And he's crying when the pick came in. And obviously, I mean, it was a real moment for him. And his girlfriend, you know, she just sort of slowly puts her arms around him and wants to just, she puts her head right in frame, tilts her head so that we all see her face, and she's not moving. And it's a deep one, two, three count, and she's not leaving. We can't even see him. We can only see her face.
It's her moment.
Right. It's her moment. What's going on here? And then suddenly you see a hand come in screen right and just kind of grab her and you say, "You get out of this frame right now." And I mean, presumably they said it was his mom or
aggressively pulling
aggressively. And then she's resisting. And this woman is just yanking her out of frame. And she gets up kind of wobbly and violently and is thrown off the screen. And then suddenly a parade of others come in. And I thought, this is the coolest thing I've seen all weekend. And these girlfriends, you gotta play this moment well. I've never been a girlfriend, so I don't know what the mentality there is, but you got to be more savvy than that.
Dare to dream, Mark.
That's all.
Never too late.
I'm going to jump off that because it's a similar realm. Just the idea of these cameras being set up in the living rooms, and it just makes you think because everyone's watching the same thing, and you're watching all the analysis, everybody chiming in with their thoughts, and when Jake Fromm is falling down the draft board. You know, especially when we get into the mid to late rounds and they're looking for what's the big story. Oh, who's the quarterback that hasn't been taken yet that people thought was going to go? Jake Fromm from State Farm, he was hearing the same conversation over and over again about how bad his combine performance was and that how he had a noodle arm. And he was a guy that there's a reason why he hasn't been taken yet because he's not an NFL quarterback. And eventually he goes to the Bills and good for him because don't tell Bills fans, but that's not a bad place to go. And guess what? It's like, that's tough. He's sitting on a couch with all the closest people in his life, and you're just like staring at a screen, and you're already in a bad mood. And then you have like Daniel Jeremiah saying that you have a noodle arm, and it's like, oh, this is good for my self-esteem. don't know. That's a loser for me.
What would the equivalent be if you were being critiqued in front of your family on a couch, Dan, as a, or any of us, a host or a podcaster, blogger type person? What is the equivalent of a noodle arm? I'm not sure.
I don't know, but you guys saw me in an uncomfortable situation yesterday.
Yes. You handled really well. You did a nice job.
Do we get into that? Oh, yeah.
Well, my beautiful wife had the great idea. It was a great idea to assemble all like my closest friends on both sides of the coast for a semi-surprise Zoom conversation. And it happened, you know, the second round of the draft had started. It was like 5 o'clock. And I come in to the living room when I get summoned to come in. And then I see all of you guys. I see Colleen, Gonzo, Henry, Erica, Jet, all the people I love on the West Coast, but then all my New York friends. And it was just like kind of like a mashup that left me, you know, deeply uncomfortable. And Emily thought it was going to like turn into this thing where it was like being at a party where not everybody would know each other, but we would all be connected in some way, and then everybody would get along and it would become a great old time.
But you could be hiding in the kitchen in that scenario.
Yeah. But it wasn't going to happen. I just couldn't get comfortable. So I ended it after about 10 minutes, and my wife was dumbfounded. But I stand by my decision, but you guys seem to get a kick out of my decision to essentially end my own birthday party.
I thought Greg had some incredible commentary during it because he could sort of see, and I think we all know, everyone on the call knows you well enough to know that, number one, Emily put a lot of work into it, and that is awesome. I wrote her back. I said, awesome wife points. You did it. You put a lot of effort into that thing. And so it's nothing to do with Emily, but we all know that Dan's sort of social comfort zone and mores would not suggest that would have been where you're. You know, that Greg picked up on it and made a couple comments that I couldn't help but laughing.
Well, I felt Dan, I think we all would, knowing the three of us, maybe not Wes, but me and Mark and Dan, I would have felt the same as you, Dan, and not in a bad way, but just I would have felt uncomfortable and I wouldn't know what to do. And I would feel like everyone was like looking at me and I would have like. So I could feel it. And knowing you, I knew that you wouldn't have set up the party exactly like this. You would have had a certain, you know, way to do this.
And I would have separated it.
Yeah.
You would have.
Yeah. So everyone understood, but it was still funny to see you like multiple times aggressively trying to shut it down. And it was only like, it only lasted like 8 or 9 minutes.
Yeah. And Emily was just like, wait, we're ending this. And like, I was like, there's going to be some explaining to do, but Simone was sitting right next to me. She's like, she's very much like you in that front. She's just like, I totally get where Dan's coming from.
There was
she's
a moment right after I clicked end meeting where I could tell I was watching the gears turning in Emily's head, like, and she was deciding whether to be mad at me or not. And luckily she decided not to be mad because I explained it to her and I think she understood. And then shortly after I got on and did about an hour plus with all my New York friends. And I think we were planning potentially for all the West Coasters to do something after the show today. And that's just way better to me. Anyway, but it was a great thought. And I appreciate it.
I want to read you a quote that I did send to the group tech, which is one of the things you said to us, Dan, which was, Dan said, I want to talk to you all individually soon, but I'm going to have to let you go.
See, there's a very specific reason why I would have been just as uncomfortable as you guys in this situation.
Okay.
If you put all of those people in the same building, I wouldn't be uncomfortable at all. But the technology does not exist where side conversations can happen on Zoom.
Right.
So everybody's just waiting their turn and half the people don't know each other.
Dan had to do all the talking too. He had to like finesse and talk to everybody. Like, there were 16, 17 boxes of people. And it's like, how are you doing, Sally? Good to see you, Sally.
I'm so happy it's over. All right, let's get back on track.
Here, while we're kind of off football, and I do have a couple quick football ones, but while you were talking DJ, I think I'm not just kissing up. I think Daniel Jeremiah is a big winner. I know he's taken some heat on this podcast, but you put him not only is this the highest rated draft of all time, but it's the only one where like I've never watched the ESPN draft because I just happen to, you know, I always watch NFL Network. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that normally watch ESPN that this time they get exposed to the NFL Network one. And it's the mashup of all the analysts and the experts. And I don't think I'm biased. DJ's better than everyone. So
I agree with that.
I feel like ESPN is watching that, and I feel like everyone's watching that, and I can't be the. And I'm sure some people would disagree.
Yeah, but just what DJ needs, more job offers.
I think, right, exactly. I think there's be a lot of people, including inside of our industry, that will look at that and go, DJ was the best one on that screen.
Well, I could see DJ suddenly getting vaulted into this eternal Monday Night Football conversation at some point. I mean, he's great at it. He prepared for it. And every time they threw it to him, he nailed it. And right. And he also, the problem is, although we have this so-called feud with him, he's too nice to truly have a problem.
No,
with.
You're like, on the fence as usual, Sessler.
The feud is genuinely the feud like the podcast. He's a terrible podcaster. We're, you know, we don't need to get past that.
We don't know about that.
But we don't know about that. He's got to start one for us to know.
Right. But in terms of doing this, it was great.
No, he did a very fine job. And I was trying to explain to Emily, actually, she's like, so how's this different than other years? And I was like, well, actually, NFL Network does their own draft coverage and ESPN does their own draft coverage. She was like, that's pretty weird. And then I thought about it too. I was like, that is pretty weird that there's competing draft coverages of the same event, but yeah. That's always how it's been. And it changed this year.
Well, ESPN thought the same thing when NFL Network started their coverage. Yes. But it ended up being kind of like a big hit for NFL Network.
Guess what? NFL Network does have Daniel Jeremiah and they will have him hopefully, God willing, next April as well. All right. You want to do some like kind of quick hitters?
Yeah.
All sure. Right. Go ahead, Wes.
Quick hitter winner, Handsome Hank. Since I've known him, he's been a fan of the most boring team in the NFL. They haven't always been the worst team, but they've lacked direction. They've been boring. They've been uninspiring. And this is so it's so risky that it could all blow up, but they're finally interesting.
The Miami Dolphins.
The Miami Dolphins are finally interesting. Thank you, Dan. And they have so many players. They have so many young players because of the draft picks. I think they have more than twice the amount of players as the Pittsburgh Steelers on the roster. They are loaded with players. They go too deep at long snapper. To me, the Dolphins are finally interesting, and I like it.
I think they have the right coach to kind of coach up a young group like this, especially on defense, Brian Flores. Like, you're going to have to be a teacher when almost your whole roster is rookies and second-year players. And you're right. They look a lot more fun than they did a few days ago.
Mark, quick loser. And it's you know, I think Greg was right. The more you hear about Yannick Ngakoue, that he had been a really model citizen for the Jaguars for a long time, but things have come to a head and he wanted out. And, you know, while Trent Williams got moved out of town, Ngakoue is still in Jacksonville. And they've said, you know, hey, we'd welcome him back with open arms. But it just feels like a pretty messy situation. And I think that in another world or in a different type of draft and with different needs and different players available, maybe someone would have made a play for him. We thought maybe Seattle would have been one of those guys. It's still possible to some degree, but it doesn't look good. It sounds like there were just no offers at all.
GM app. Here's a loser. Like, mean-spirited / thoughtless takedowns of coaches and personnel men. Now that we've seen them smiling and bonding with their children.
Oh, it's hard
for
now.
Three straight days. All these like cute kids, these, you know, toddlers, grade school teenagers. And then they come into the room with the wives and they're sharing these bonding moments.
Belichick's dog.
It's kind of, yeah, even Belichick's dog was in the mix. It made you think Belichick was human. But like, can we really like take down Bob Quinn after seeing him high five his son and then hug his daughter after thinking he nailed the pick? I don't like this. It makes me feel, and I don't want to feel.
Give me 6 months.
Exactly. Yeah. We need that. And then I'll throw out one more. Any potential attempt, not that I think it's happening, but of a Bill O'Brien image makeover, then I'm not this like mean, prickly guy that's impossible to work with. He was caught on camera on Friday night cursing at someone on the phone. It was supposed to be just like, and yes, GMs across the league are hard at work. And it just happened to hit on Bill O'Brien when he was looked like yelling and cursing at someone about something. And then he stood up and kind of stalked off screen past his own son and kind of crossed over the camera. And clearly he was fired up. And then the great John McClain, who's been, you know, covering football down there forever, tweeted moments later, Texans had a deal with Detroit for the 90th pick, but Lions backed out at last instant and Bill O'Brien was furious. You could tell by his reaction on TV and they selected an outside linebacker instead. So Bill O'Brien, who doesn't have the, you know, the kindest reputation, Seems like that was not great timing for him.
Lions denied this aggressively on the record too. Yep. For what it's
he
worth.
Who denied it supplied it. What about you, Greg?
It was really funny to see the his son too not change his expression the whole time watching
his
it.
His son has seen that before.
I'll roll through a few quick winner QBs. Jarrett Stidham. I didn't think the Patriots were going to take a quarterback. They didn't. They added some tight ends. We'll see. But they believe in Jarrett Stidham. Whether they're right or wrong, like we've been saying that on this podcast, I think that that's their guy. They were not looking for
Can I give up a fourth rounder for Andy Dalton, be done with the charade?
Thank you.
Well, I mean, he's been in their building and they like him, it's like, why not? Why not? But you're right. They could use a backup. That I mean, Brian Hoyer.
Starter.
They're one pass and they went out and signed Cody Kessler. I mean, come on.
They cut him. Yeah, they cut Cody Kessler.
I mean, when they finally let Jared Stidham throw a pass, he threw one pass, and then they're like, oh, we need to sign Cody Kessler. We can't get
Jacoby Brissett back at this point. There's too many quarterbacks.
You could maybe. Phillip Rivers gets, you know, Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman Jr. in the second round. That offense is looking fun. I think that's a team that could compete for a Super Bowl, Wes, if things broke right.
If the Ravens and Chiefs did not exist, I would agree with you.
Right. You know, they're playing from behind. And then Jared Goff, I like their second round picks at running back and receiver too, especially Cam Akers, who was stuck in like a terrible situation at Florida State, which was a nightmare. But if you like the moves he makes, he reminded me a little bit of Devin Singletary, just a guy who's going to make you miss in a small corner. And they take Van Jefferson, who DJ compared, you know, directly to Cooper Kupp leading up to the draft. And now he's going to be with Cooper Kupp.
Mark.
I would just like to bring someone in who this whole draft, he did not get a chance to hang out with his dad. This is Colton. It's his birthday today.
Hey, look at that beautiful boy.
8 years old. How old? How's your birthday so far today?
Good.
What did you just bake for everyone?
A cake.
Well, you had to bake on your own birthday, Colton?
Oh, kids love baking.
He loves to bake. He loves to bake. So part of one of his gifts he got was a big cooking tray and all this other stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
So
nice.
What did you think of the Browns draft, Colton?
The Browns draft. What do you think? Thumbs up?
Yeah.
What about, so let's show him your shirt real fast.
Ooh, he's wearing a Super Bowl champion Eagles.
He's a big Eagles fan. So now a lot of people were upset with the Eagles draft. How do you feel?
Good.
You're good? Okay.
He feels okay about it. See, he's not going to be hysterical about it. And he's 8 years old.
You're eight. So you've got a lot of, you know, you've got a lot of experience on the world. So that shows right here. Well, happy birthday, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Happy birthday,
pal. Happy birthday, Colton.
Another April boy.
We'll see you, okay?
a quick winner, Arizona real estate. The Cliff Kingsbury photo, yeah, which everybody was talking about. It was one of the biggest stories in draft one. The LA Times wrote about it. And there were some people who were like, oh, yeah, real estate. Yeah, it goes real far in Arizona. I bet he paid $300K for that place. And it's like, what? Well, guess what? Kingsbury dropped $4.45 million on the mansion last year.
Yeah.
A few months after joining the Cardinals on that 4-year contract. And here's the specs. Spanning over an acre in Paradise Valley, the 7,000 square foot home sits about 20 miles east of the team stadium in Glendale. It boasts 4 bedrooms and 5.5 bathrooms in 7,000 square feet, as well as an entertainer's backyard, complete with a swimming pool, pool house, and fire pit surrounded by patches of turf.
Mm. Well, thank you, taxpayers of Texas, funding the $10 million, you know, college coach at Texas A&M for however long he was there. It's like,
and
way to go.
And speaking of Texas, my final winner, I was very happy with my New York Jets, who had a solid draft. And with Joe Douglas as the GM, it does feel like there's a grown-up in the room making decisions. I love the tackle they got in the first round, but then a savvy move, it turned out. He moved back in the second round, and everybody's screaming, draft Denzel Mims out of Baylor, Greg's boy, and he moved back. He's like, oh, he's going to miss out. He got Mims anyway after moving back about 10 spots, and then they filled in some needs later in the draft as well. It seems like a draft that could turn out well. And their two biggest, most important things they need to do is improve the offensive line. And they added two linemen, including the 11th overall pick. They desperately needed to replace Robbie Anderson. And now Mims enters the picture. And Mims, Perryman, and Crowder, maybe not the best wide receiver group in the world, but there's potential there. And I feel much better about the Jets offense. We'll see if Adam Gase ruins it all, but we'll find out. And there's one other big winner, speaking of Texas. It is Bob Bates, DDS, retired. He is my father-in-law, and he joins us.
Whoa!
Hey. First time ever on the Around the NFL podcast, and he is sporting his Baylor Bears.
Sick'em Bears.
Yeah. Bob Bates, welcome to my father-in-law, Bob Bates. Welcome to the Around the NFL podcast. What a moment for you and I, for Denzel Mims and the New York Jets to be reunited.
Hey, Dan, Chris, up, Greg, and Mark.
Hey, Bob.
You guys have been busy the last couple of days.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, I couldn't be more excited about Denzel Mims going to the Jets. Now Dan has to get me some Jets gear so I can wear it and be a fan down here.
Absolutely. So, well, you know, we previously had a potential to bond on Bryce Petty. We won't talk about that. It did not work out. But he was operating in that old spread offense for Baylor. The Matt Rhule offense is a little more pro-oriented. Why, Bob, and this, there are a lot of Jets fans that listen to the show, why were you pounding the table? Why did you think Denzel Mims was a guy that could be a star at this level?
Well, he's always been underrated. Even when he was in high school, he was a great high school player at Dangerfield High School in East Texas. And he wasn't highly recruited in Texas. And he went to a Baylor camp, and they got him. And make a long story short, he was like a 6'3 guy with 180 pounds, but he was a track star, a basketball star, and just they saw the athleticism, so they grabbed him. And the first year at Baylor, he did a little bit as a freshman. His sophomore year, he was a 1,000-yard receiver. His junior year, he had a broken hand nobody really knew about that kind of limited his productivity. And then his senior year, he had a great senior year and great Sugar Bowl. He had 5 catches. And then, of course, you guys have all been reported on his – you know how great he was at the Senior Bowl and the Combine. I mean, good grief, he ran a 4.38 or something like that and did all those other things well. And he's just tough, and he's a humble guy. He did all the right things at Baylor, never got in trouble, went to class, community service. You know, he's just a good guy, and he's very humble. And I noticed one of the things that kind of I thought was funny last night when he got picked that one of the first things the commentator said was, well, he'll have to get over that Baylor offense or whatever. Well,
I saw that.
Hey, Matt Rhule came in and they ran a pro-style offense, so what you have to get over? I don't know, but, you know, he's doing real well. He runs routes, but I think one of the most impressive things to me is not only his attitude and being humble and hungry is that those 50-50 balls, man, he'll get them. Mm. He goes after them. Oh, he doesn't mess with anybody.
He's tough to my ears.
Yeah.
Jets haven't had a guy like that in a while.
What a scouting report. This is.
I told you.
On again, yeah.
I told you Bob Bates knows what he's talking about.
Well, you know, I knew about Baylor. Baylor had a good day today besides Mims. You know, they had some other players, James Lynch, Bravion Roy, and then Clay Johnston's pick. Because
it did break your heart. It did break Bob's heart when Rhule left.
Well, it did, you know. But, you know, Rhule did say when he came in, he was up front, he's never hidden the fact that he wanted to be an NFL coach. And you know, he was up front about it, and we all knew it was a matter of time. But, he did a great, great service for Baylor, and I think Baylor did a great service for him getting into the Big 12 where he could, you know, have a national spotlight. But, you know, I would wish you nothing but the best. And, you know, Bravion Roy from Baylor went to the Carolina Panthers today, so – that'll be pretty cool to watch that too. So,
are you going to feel any pressure though? You know, when the fall comes, and I'm with you. I'm no expert. These GMs are obviously a lot smarter. I couldn't understand why Denzel Mims wouldn't have gone much earlier.
Than
59. Based on, I mean, the athleticism and the ball skills are outrageous. But are you going to feel a little pressure? This is now your guy. You know, in the fall and next year, you know, you're going to be synonymous with Denzel Mims.
Oh, that's true.
I'm not worried about that. he's gonna make Sam Darnold look good.
All right. Well, that's fine with me, Bob.
Maybe they can take down the Patriots.
That would be nice. That's been about 2 decades overdue, to be honest with you, Bob. Well, all right. So this is thank you again, Bob. This gave me something. It was my birthday weekend, and when the pick came out, you know, we had been clocking Denzel Mims for a while. So now that he's a Jet and will likely be a starter for them, all things considered.
A pro bowler.
It's going to be very cool. And an all-pro and a Hall of Famer. So,
can I just say one thing?
Yes.
Chris, congratulations on three fronts. One on beating the Big C, one on getting – married to Lakeisha, and I wondering the baby coming along. We're all watching you and appreciate you.
Thank you, Bob. That's very, very heartfelt, very genuine, and thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. And Bob, appreciate you guys. You're doing a great job. We love you.
Thank you, Bob. Bob Bates is one of the best people I've ever known. I'm so happy to have him in my life. So thank you, Bob Bates, for everything, including your daughter. But, yeah, thank you. All right. Bob Bates, DDS, retired from Texas. That was very good. That's the analysis I was looking for.
Suddenly, Spice Rack, you know, he's feeling a little disturbance in the forts right now.
Speaking of which, should Spice Rack be a winner, or should Old McDonald be a winner? Forget not making the list of Bob McGinn quarterbacks. Old McDonald is drafted, and he's a Tennessee Titan.
There you go.
You know what? When did he go? Fifth round?
Seventh round.
Seven.
But even that, I think, was maybe a mild surprise.
He goes to the Titans. That's a decent landing spot. You know, maybe Tannehill's a flash in the pan, and all of a sudden he's playing big snaps. And Spicy, a lot riding on that for Spicy.
They've got a vacancy in that two spot after Mariota went to the Raiders. I got one more quick winner.
Yeah.
The tiny sliver of the Venn diagram that includes Patriots fans, special teams lovers, and people who like to watch dynasties burn.
Well, that sounds good.
I mean, he got all these needs you have on offense. It's like, nah, we'll just take a bunch of linebackers who can play special teams. That's all we need.
Well, they got a kicker, Wes. Are you not impressed with that pickup?
Yeah, I'm sure he's great. I don't know about his choice in tattoos, but I'm sure he's a great kicker.
Wasn't the Patriots, the first pick from the Patriots was like the first D2 guy to go in the second round in a long time? Was something obscure.
Yeah, I think we literally made a joke about this last week that they're going to trade out of the first round and take a guy from like a made up school. And they took a guy from Lenoir Rhyme or Rhine. I don't even know, a D2 school. Yes. He was the highest one ever. Kyle Duggar. And then they took a bunch of Michigan, a tough bunch of
Bill Stennings statements with a little pooch on his lap.
But I'll tell you, this kicker pick, and they took him in the same round they took Gustkowski.
Not on my scouting report, Greg.
15 years ago. Wasn't even listed as like one of the top 10 or 12 kickers. But this pick upset me more than I think Gronk and Brady being in Tampa. Because one of the things they have is a kicker legacy. And you're taking a guy with this. I mean, I learned about, you know, the 3%, what is it called, today. But you're taking a guy that needs to answer questions about his alt-right tattoo in his introductory press conference.
He did explain that he didn't know what it meant when he got the tattoo. But I don't know. How do you stumble into that?
Yeah. Well, and then he said, okay, I'm going to cover it now. It's like, well, you've had it on for like 5 years. So I'm not really enjoying this.
Will he counterpoint? Will he fit in well with as Wes would say, a portion of the Venn diagram of Patriots fans that feel just a tad meat-heady?
I think he's got to worry about fitting in that locker room.
Are you talking about the Godsmack contingent, Mark Spessler?
I mean, that's, you know, I'm not saying that I know them personally, but I've heard stories. So,
all right. Good stuff, guys. Did we cover everything? We don't want to leave anything out. Any other kind of storylines from the draft? We'll cover it all in the week ahead.
I have a feeling we're going to do another show at some point here.
We do have, we are actually now with the draft now in the rear view. We are going to go away from the daily model during the week. Don't be upset, but we're going to still give you three shows a week. This week we will, though, move away from the Monday to Friday format. I'm sure we'll be back at it sooner rather than later. It's kind of like we all decided we're going to play it by ear. So, but this week we're going to do either two or three shows, and then after this week will be three a week until I would imagine things start to ramp up come training camp, hopefully.
And we appreciate everyone who, we know we've been putting out a lot, and we appreciate like the people that are listening every day. It's kind of amazing like that we can put out daily at this time of year and people are still listening. But yes, the news is going to get, it's going to get quiet. It's a quiet time of the year for the NFL in any year, much less this one.
Right. Yeah, so,
I was going to just say it was a year ago that, you know, we'd finished this podcast and we viewed that as the beginning, the genuine beginning of the off season. And the four of us and others went down to old Rocco's there in Culver City, and Wes was recorded drinking something called a fruity, bubbly explosion. that won't be happening today. And I actually genuinely miss our crew being able to hang out at this time of year from here until training camp. And it's something we look forward to. It's a really different world. And I think what's so different is at this point with the draft out of the way, we don't know. We move into a wilderness, and I just hope that there's something at the on the other end of it football wise.
Yeah, it's this time of year that really made me accept L.A. and California when I moved out here. This May through mid-July section that we get every year has been the highlight of living in L.A. for me, and I wonder what's going to happen this year.
Well, you get a baby this year. That'll be
well, fun. Yeah, that's going to be great.
Yeah,
you'll but be that, inside you can a lot do less. That any city.
This yes, coincides the shuttering of outside interaction. It's going to actually work out for you on a small level because you're going to be inside regardless of what the laws of the city are.
That's true. Although you do have that nice big backyard. I, you know, throwing an infant just in the middle of a backyard and kind of, I mean, that's not bad. It's not a bad place for an infant.
Got to childproof that area, Wes.
It's pretty childproof.
Yeah.
No way he's getting out.
That little side garage.
Just keep Brassy out of there. That's how you get the child.
Hey, we missed Brassy at the fire pit.
Oh, yeah. I miss all our old friends at NFL media. So hopefully this all starts to move, inch its way back toward normality. And to be quite honest, doing three shows a week during this time of year, it was normal for us before. So we're sticking with what we've always done in the past. So thank you to everybody for listening. You are the best. We really appreciate you. And we will be back. I don't know, when do we come back? Tuesday? Wednesday? One of those days. You'll hear from us our next show. So please be there to listen to it. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood, Bob Bates, DDS, retired. Until Tuesday or Wednesday.